Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We're sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by Jeff Rimebold as we look ahead to the divisional round of the playoffs in the NFL. Just 8 teams remaining on the road to Super Bowl 49 in Arizona. Jeff Rimebold asks, and Nick Pike and NFL UK deliver. Here we are with our second podcast of the week, Jeff, just as you wanted.
You know what? I tell you, I'm so, so grateful to Alistair Kirkwood and the team over at NFL UK London office. Just amazing we get a chance to do this and talk more in depth and bring more football to the fans, more NFL to the fans.
And we can dig into the games, the 4 games that we've got this weekend, Jeff. And, you know, just first glance, and we'll get into them a little bit later on. We're going to go through some news as well and a couple of other issues around the NFL. At first glance, what a great matchup of quarterbacks. I mean, if you love quarterbacks and the attention that they bring to the NFL, you've got Brady and Flacco, Wilson and Newton, Romo and Rodgers, Luck and Manning. Every single matchup has at least one Super Bowl winning quarterback.
You know what? And it speaks to what we talk about all the time, Neil, when you and I talk about, you know, what are the hot jobs, what teams are going to be, you know, good next year, all of those issues. It all comes back to that one position, or at least it seems to all the time. The guy who stands behind the center is the focal point, the most important guy. And you look at these guys, and in every case, they're guys that we always talk about when is he the next elite quarterback or who's the best quarterback in the league right now. There's not a, you know, there's not a Brad Johnson or a Trent Dilfer in this group. These are all legitimate guys that can win games for you from the quarterback position.
And they're certainly talked about, aren't they? I mean, even, you know, Cam Newton and Tony Romo over the years, although they haven't delivered a Super Bowl title there, they're always making headlines for good or bad.
Yeah, exactly. And you look at how physically talented this bunch of quarterbacks is. And it really, the thing that I think is really kind of cool about the whole deal is when you evaluate them, you've got your, quote, pure passers or pocket guys like Manning and you know, Brady and really Flacco more. You know, he can move around a little bit. Yeah. But then you got guys like Romo and Rodgers and Cam Newton and Luck can extend plays. And, you know, and then again, you look at them from the continuation of there, you know, there's Peyton at the end of his career. How many more opportunities is he going to have than playoffs to a young guy like Luck who's just getting started? And it's so amazing how they run the gamut age-wise.
So we are going to dig into these 4 games. We're going to mix it up a little bit because we've got the benefit of this second podcast of the week. So we're going to go through a rapid-fire question and answer session, Jeff. We're going to take 1 minute, and I'm going to ask you as many questions. You're going to answer as many as you can. We are also... I love a good statistic. You know I love a good stat.
The numbers in the game, the numbers behind the numbers.
So I'm going to give you 10 statistics that relate to the 4 games this weekend, and you're going to tell me if they really matter or if they're just for media guys like me who might to make a story. Let's start with a little bit of news. Jameis Winston is going to turn pro. So he's just finished his redshirt sophomore year at Florida State. Lost in the semifinal this year, won the national championship last year. This is a guy who's played 2 years at college, been up and down, on and off the field. Heisman Trophy winner. He was in trouble for stealing soda from Burger King, for crab legs from Publix. He had a BB gun. There was a suspicion of a rape allegation. But on the field, there's been production as well. I mean, the next few months with this guy are going to be Manziel-like, aren't they, in terms of what we saw last year and how much scrutiny he's going to come under in the draft process?
I really think this is going to be interesting to watch him go through this and watch how the NFL teams respond to this, because you know there will be teams that frankly will reference Manziel, you know, and all of the challenges that he's had. Here was a guy who had won a Heisman Trophy, had done all of very much same kind of career that Jameis had, but not with nearly the off-field issues or reported off-field issues, purported off-field issues that Jameis has had. Now he goes to the National Football League and doesn't seem to have the work ethic, doesn't seem to have, you know, all of the things we've talked about over the year with Johnny, do you really want to take on a guy who has only 2 years of college football, right? Mm. So now if you he's got 26 starts in his yeah. life, you're going to make him a franchise quarterback, and he comes to you with all kinds of baggage. I think teams are going to look really, really close. However, you know and I know both because we cover this and we follow the draft. And, you know, if a guy demonstrates ability, mm. physical ability, there are teams that will tend to overlook off-the-field issues. You know, with all of the things that have gone on around the National Football League in the last couple years, I think that might be starting to change a little mm. bit now because, there aren't very many owners that want to put their name to a guy that can't take care of his business off the field. A
couple of numbers that jumped out to me, and then we'll move on to the next story. He's only just turned 21. So, you know, your thoughts on that in terms of the inexperience, and we're going to see more kids coming out of college doing this. And also, Jeff, the comparisons to Johnny Manziel are there in terms of, you know, the worries around mm-hmm. the off-field stuff. But mm-hmm. this guy is 6'4" and 230 pounds, so there's a difference there.
Yeah, no question about that. I mean, physically, he's a totally different guy. Mm. He is a big, strong, athletic, talented individual. There's no question about that.
Where do you stand on the young guys coming out early?
Well, here's my position with that. You know, obviously, a quarterback, I understand why they want to come out. Mm. Obviously, his opportunity to make money as fast as he can get his hands on the money, right? I understand that. Yeah. I mean, certainly all of us feel that way to a certain degree. However, from a developmental standpoint, you know, he doesn't have, like you said, 26 starts mm. under his belt. How many balls has he thrown? Mm. How many times has he seen, you know, even at the college level, playing in the conference that he plays in, you know, he sees the best of college football. Mm. Now, it's a huge jump to the National Football League, and so you're going to jump early? That doesn't make sense to me. Mm. Get as many reps as you can. I understand the risk of, you know, the injury and all those other things, but if I, you know, again, I just really think about Geno when you talk about Jameis Winston. And Geno Smith had that one really good year at West Virginia. And really that, if you look at that year and break that year down, it was really only the first three quarters of the year that he really tailed off at the end of that season. And just doesn't have the experience, doesn't have the number of throws, doesn't have the time behind the center. And he's been in the shotgun every snap of his college career. And all of these things make his developmental curve so much steeper. So again, if I'm an owner and I'm a franchise, I mean, say for example, let's talk about the Bucs, right? Because this is a team that's going to be, quote, in the market for a quarterback. I'm not sure, and I think this is really interesting. That's one of the reasons I think Trestman interviewed there. I'm not sure they don't think, hey, McCown's good enough. We just need better players around him.
Right.
So rather than take the first pick in the draft and use it on a quarterback, we can impact our team greater by trading that pick down.
Yep.
Getting multiple picks and bring more good players in. So I think that's probably the strategy that's working, you know, in Tampa.
Sticking with quarterbacks, I read with interest that Colin Kaepernick is planning to train with Kurt Warner during the offseason. He's never officially had, not a quarterback coach, but he's going to go to Phoenix and he's going to work out with an organization there. And Kurt Warner is a part of that. And, you know, this is Kaepernick looking at his game and saying, I do want to improve. And I thought this as well, Jeff. As much as we say, you know, we can question, you know, I've questioned a lot of what Colin Kaepernick does or the way he appears to be. We can't question his work ethic. Apparently, he's going to start this program next week and it's going to run all the way up till March when he then starts the off-season program with the 49ers. So he's pretty dedicated.
I'm big ups to him. I'm really proud of him for doing it. I mean, certainly he's established himself as the starter, and he's a top-level quarterback in the National Football League, and certainly he could sit around and collect his money and you know, go on holiday and do all those other things, but he's choosing to invest in his future and his team's future. Mm. So if you're a San Francisco 49er fan, you're a member of that organization, or you're on that team, that's got to be impressive to you that your leader is taking his own initiative to work during the offseason and work with a seasoned pro, a guy like Kurt Warner. And I think maybe more than how he delivers the ball or whether he can continue to develop throwing to his left and, you know, his footwork and all the little deficiencies that he has in his game right now, I think more importantly, it's going to be the professionalism of a guy like Kurt Warner will rub off on him. That's what I would hope he got more out of it more than anything else.
So you think it's more because Kurt was the model professional. There's no getting away from that. Do you think it's as much that as it is? I'm throwing my pen across the studio. Good hands. That's good hands. Hang on.
You were a receiver, weren't you?
Yeah, I was.
Fumble high and tight with a pen, Neil.
Yeah, I know. Hang on. All right, bear with me. I've completely forgotten what I was going to say.
Oh, you're talking about Kurt Warner and his professionalism.
So the professionalism, or is it because Kurt Warner was a pure pocket passer?
Well, I think it's a little of both of those things because where does he need to improve the most? Well, it's from the pocket. It's throwing from the pocket, being good in the pocket, you know. And that opportunity to sit in there and watch tape and go through the drills and get into his head and do all of those things, and for Kaepernick an opportunity to really find out what, you know, Kurt Warner's story is an amazing story. Here's a kid out of Northern Iowa that's bagging groceries, and because he never quit on his dream, ends up being probably a Hall of Fame quarterback. And, you know, I think that's a good message for a kid who came the other way, you know, who really had it not handed to him, certainly, but he was the guy from the time he was drafted, and they – you know, made him the face of the franchise. So, again, I think all of those intangibles, if you will, those are the things that I think Kurt Warner can bring the most to Colin Kaepernick.
Just a little update for NFL UK fans. You can now apply for tickets for Super Bash, which is always a great night. I've had the pleasure of hosting a couple of those over the years. It's going to be at Indigo 02 again this year, and you can apply for tickets at nfluk.com. One other thing I wanted to talk about, Jeff, before we get into these four games, is I wrote a mailbag for NFL UK this week, and there was a couple of questions about the Giants and how good could Eli Manning and Odell Beckham Jr. be next year. And it got me to thinking about, well, it took a while for that team to get on track offensively this year because Ben McAdoo came in and you're installing a new offense. And now Jacksonville are going to go through the same thing. They fired Jed Fish. They're going to bring in a new offensive coordinator. And I saw in Jacksonville, so they can't talk to the players until they're back at the end of March. Right. Can't even have any football conversations with them whatsoever.
Right.
So how hard is it from year to year to install an offense? Or should we be looking at the Giants and saying, well, why didn't you get it done early in the season? Well, tell us the process.
You know, here's the way that all of that stuff is shaken down now. In the old days, you know, and I'm talking about the old days was 10 years ago with the way the CBA has changed and what you can and can't do with players. You know, those players were around the facility. They were in the offices. They would come in. They would look at tape. You could talk to them about them. So the ability to get information to the athlete was much easier. Mm. Now, because of the way these CBA rules are, and I agree with them, frankly, you know, because coaches were pushing the envelope too much in the off. There was no offseason. There was no time for the player to get away. Now he has an opportunity to get away. But when you give, you have to get. And the player gets it, more time, more ability to rehab, more time to heal. Well, what do you lose? You lose time in terms of installation. And installation in the National Football League is critical. It's also not just the time, it's the way now that they have to go through OTAs and coaching, the coaching sessions, the walkthroughs. Mm. When you go out to walk through, the way it's structured now, you can't even face another player, right? So again, what's that force coaches to do? Use, you know, more props on this, you know, whether it's a medicine ball, whether it's a, you know, a garbage can, whatever it is. You've seen you've gone around and visited. But again, those things don't move, and those things aren't, you know, it's hard to get the same picture. Mm. So, yes, it's going to hurt any team that's going into a new system. They're going to be behind a little bit. And, you know, I think it's really interesting when you talk about Jacksonville, you know, you and I are both big Gus Bradley fans, but I think this is a critical year for him.
Yeah.
And in this year, he's going to have to show more W's. And when, you know, now as he shores up that defense, is the offense, if you go into a new system now, there's pluses and minuses, right? Now you're going to have to get everybody on the same page. You got to make sure you got the personnel to run that system. The Giants are the same thing on defense because they got rid of Perry Fuel. And you know, we talked about it. They were deficient on defense.
Yeah.
It wasn't the offense in my mind that hurt the Giants. It was defensively. They couldn't play at a level they needed to play at. So now they've gone out and
– Is that Gus Bradley?
They've gone out and got rid of Perry Fuel, and they got rid of Peter Junta, their secondary coach. And, well, you got to replace those guys.
Yeah,
and
now
here's really – I heard it said this way one time by a player, and he was talking to a coach. He goes, Coach, you say blue, right, and I see the blue of the sky, and you see the blue of my shirt. Well, they're all blue, but they're different shades of blue, right? So it takes time
before
different you really you really get it. So terminology changes, and the plays are all pretty much the same, blocked the same way, but it's how you call it, the length of the terminology, how you get the plays run in and out, and then just the interpersonal relationship that it takes, particularly with the quarterback. And that's why I think when you see a guy like Mark Trestman, who has a reputation of being a quarterback whisperer, if you will, go to Tampa and interview for the offensive coordinator's job, and then go to Jacksonville and interview for the offensive coordinator's job. Obviously, they're trying to put the best guy around Blake Bortles they can.
Yeah. We're going to got a good question in the mailbag about the relationship between an offensive coordinator and a quarterback a little bit later on, so we'll get to that. Let's get into the four games then. So everything starts on Saturday night, Sky Sports 2 from 9:30 p.m. Again, we've got every game in the playoffs exclusively live on Sky Sports. Before we dig into every game, Jeff, which we'll do, should we do these 10 stats just to set us up? Little taster, and you can tell me what you think about all of these. So I'm going to read out these stats, 10 stats that we've dug up for this weekend's games. So we'll start. Joe Flacco's 7 road playoff wins are the most in NFL history.
Only significant in the number. That's all. Not significant when it comes down to playing this weekend.
Like it. That's what we like. Straight to the point. Don't diss too many of my stats. I'm just going to say, I like these stats. Tom Brady completed completed 25% of passes that traveled 20-plus air yards in 2014. That was the third lowest in the NFL.
Awesome statistic. Awesome statistic if you're playing against him, because now what does that tell you to do? You want to squeeze routes. You want to squat on routes.
Yeah.
You want to make sure you got to make him throw the ball vertically to beat you. And I think that's where analytics, all of these kinds of things, have really reshaped how a coach coaches.
The Ravens will know that stat,
absolutely,
right?
And they will share that stat with their players.
The Carolina Panthers went 1-4-1 in the regular season against teams who qualified for the playoffs.
Doesn't matter now. Absolutely
new
doesn't
season,
matter
yeah.
now. It's new season, and it's a new every week's a new week.
All right. Seattle gave up 11 touchdown receptions to tight ends this season, third most in the NFL.
Again, very valuable statistic from a coaching standpoint and from a playing standpoint, because that's the matchup now. You know that they're deficient somewhere. How are they scoring? Now you got to dig through the numbers and look at – and this is what happens. This is great stuff, because the defensive coordinator will tell the quality control guy on defense this week, give me all of the tight end catches against Seattle this year.
Okay.
And that he'll get that film, and then they will go through it, and then those films are all coded by play or whatever. And let's say it's a seam route. So you could watch 100 seam balls being caught against the Seahawks or whatever the number is. And now as a coach, you can say, okay, they have a problem with this, or this player has a problem with this, or this is how it creates those, as Frank Gans used to say, small wins, slight edges.
Yeah. I don't want to paint you as sort of coaching when it black and white TV, but there would have been a time when that sort of cut up of the film literally was a cut up of tape, wasn't it?
You know what? It's
because I hear you all the time saying, I'm at Sky cutting film.
Yeah.
You know, it's that
nobody
terminal.
Cuts film
no,
anymore.
But that's what it was, wasn't it?
Yeah. We used to have this thing this is back in the day of 16 millimeter film, which hasn't been that long ago, really.
No.
I mean, the tape explosion came in the 90s, but you had a 16 millimeter tape that was just like a movie film, just like a movie reel. And then you would look at certain plays, and at the end of every play, there was one frame that was empty so that you knew where the cuts were. So if I wanted all of the runs to, you know, to the right tackle, I would go through and I would cut those, and then I would hang them along the wall.
Oh, you literally cut them yourself?
Cut them yourself.
You had to do them yourself.
Then
you'd
splice the film back together.
Wow.
And then you'd pull them. And it was funny because you'd go into coaches' offices and there'd be all this tape hung.
Like laundry hanging around.
Scotch taped down. And then you would go back and one by one, you would create a new reel. And then that would be your reel that you would show players. It was revolutionary when we started to do it because back further than that, it wasn't possible. But now today, when I go into – we're playing Calgary in the championship game. Mm. And I go in and I say, all right, I want all of Calgary's punts from inside the 20-yard line this year. And the quality control guy will go away and he'll come back in 10 minutes and he'll have that on your computer, and then he shares that information out to all the computers in the building, and then all the players get it on their laptops at home.
Incredible. The amount of time that must have been wasted. Well,
you know what's amazing? That's what has caused some challenges too, because there's a paralysis of analysis now in some cases. You right. got to know how much to give them and how much that they can process. I mean, you could put so much minutia out there that obviously they can't digest it all. So, but you get these important things, and that's a great stat.
All right. We like that one then. The Seattle Seahawks are 24-2 at home in the Russell Wilson era.
Important. Again, I think it's important for, as you begin to strategize, all right, if you're Ron Rivera and you're his staff, you're going to talk as a staff first about how can we make sure that we take the crowd out of the game. Mm. All right. So, Mike. Talking to Mike Shula, we've got to run the ball. We've got to sustain drives. We cannot let them get momentum early in the game.
Just let the fans get bored.
Exactly. Defensively, can't give up big plays. Yeah. Special teams got to be sharp. And then talk to your – then what I'm sure is going on this week, because this is typically what happens, Ron will stand up in front of his team when they came back to work on Tuesday and said – men or Wednesday, this is what we're doing this week. We have got to take the 12th man or the 12s or whatever they call it up there.
Yep.
We got to take them out of the game. This is how we're going to accomplish that task.
The Dallas Cowboys have lost 6 consecutive road playoff games.
Not valid at all. Again, it's a new week, new time.
Yep.
Let's go play.
The Dallas Cowboys, 2,354 rushing yards this season, are their most since 1981.
Absolutely critical, because I think you have to know now, if you're a Green Bay Packer, what do you have to do? And what down do you have? What formations do these runs come from? What personnel groups do the runs come from? And as a defensive unit, Dom Capers is telling his guys, big guys, you got to get them to second and long and third and long. Mm.
Let's have a look here. The Green Bay Packers have the 5th best home scoring offense of all time, averaging 39.8 points per game.
You know, it's a interesting stat
it's
to
a
me.
Stat, yeah, isn't
yeah,
it, for
it's,
the
a,
media.
It's a cute stat, but
it's one that appeals to me. So
yeah,
it
appeals to me too. But I tell you what, I'm more concerned. The only stat I want to know is what percentage of health is Aaron Rodgers.
That's a great point. Yeah. Peyton Manning has twice as many interceptions as touchdowns in his last 4 games.
Very valid. Very. Again, you're selling. You're always selling. When you're coaching, you're selling. You're trying to get guys to play at a level
we can take
above
him.
Yeah, above what they're capable of. Getting them to understand we got to go in there with an expectation to win because, hey, fellas, look at this, right? He's not playing well. There's got to be something wrong. He's throwing twice as many interceptions. We're going to get the ball. Again, it's all about selling your players to believe that they have when they go out there, those Indianapolis Colts defenders know they are going to have success.
It's like when Rocky Balboa made Ivan Drago bleed in Rocky IV. He realized he wasn't a machine. Could take him down.
I must break you.
Yeah. The Colts turned the ball over 31 times in the regular season, ranking 29th in the NFL.
Extremely valid again. Got to talk about it if you're the Colts, right? Again, if you're Pep Hamilton and you have that first defense or offensive meeting, you're saying, guys, it's the playoffs now. We got to protect the football. We got to be smart with the ball. You know, I'm sure they're talking to Luck all week long. Mm. You know, we want you to out there cut it loose and let it rip, but let's be smart about putting the ball against this coverage or, you know, fitting the ball in this window. And receivers, we got to protect the ball. We got to catch the ball. Heron, high and tight. All those little coaching points have now become bigger.
Here's a bonus one for you. Trent Richardson did not touch the football in Indianapolis' win last week over Cincinnati.
Yeah, and again, I think that's probably the way it should go again. Mm. Because, again, you want to ride the hot horse, and right now, Boom Heron is a hot horse. Now, he just, again, like we said, he got to coach him up this week now. Running back coach, you're talking to him all the time. Hey, baby, up. High and tight, protect the ball, keep it away from tacklers.
Will he be, I mean, I know it's a cliche, but we've seen it and heard it and read it before. Will he be walking around that facility holding a football and people trying to knock it out?
You know, I don't know.
Has that happened in the past?
I don't know if that, I don't know if that's the case. But this, I'll just tell you a little story. You walk into the New Orleans Saints defensive room, mm-hmm. and the first thing you see, actually, when you walk in the room, right next to the door is a football on a spring.
Yep.
And their defensive players go in and they knock at that ball
okay.
as they walk in and out of the meeting room to create the habit of seeing Brown and knocking at the ball. The same thing's true on offense. When Tiki Barber fixed his fumbling problem, which plagued him early in his career, it's when Tom Coughlin made him carry the thing high and tight, even when he was walking around the practice field, because you've got to create that habit, that conscious habit. We're going to take a look at Boom Heron before the game, you know, Sunday. And when you and I get up on that touchscreen, we're going to show the fans how he leaves the ball at peril. And he's that's part of his game. He's got to clean up.
And turnovers, again, it's a bit stats-based, but turnovers are – magnified. Here are the seven of the eight teams left in the playoffs have a positive turnover ratio. That says something, doesn't it, right there? I
mean, what's the only team? The Colts, the only
team? Yeah, the Colts are minus
five.
That's what
I would have guessed. And you know what? That's, again, confirms with validity. Again, and this is important that coaches, when they talk to their players, that you can confirm with validity everything you say.
Yeah.
You've got to have more than, hey, men, we can't turn it over. You know, here's the facts, right?
Yeah.
When the ball is turned over in a game, your percentages, your winning percentages go down. Yes. Playing this game is just like going to Vegas, right?
Yeah.
You're trying to get the best odds you can get. Mm-hmm. Well, put it on the ground, that doesn't help your odds.
No,
right?
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it was about 75%, I think, teams that won the turnover battle this year in the regular season won the games. I mean, a massive differential.
You know, here's one that we used this year. We did we had an analytics guy come in, and he showed us that if a team was sacked in a drive, that only 3% of those drives turned into touchdowns.
They're drive killers, aren't they?
Yeah. The absolute drive killers. So for the quarterback, what's the implication? It's not just give them a stat. Give them the reason why that's important, and then what can we do to mitigate that damage? Well, first of all, don't take sacks. Get the ball out of your hands. Throw it away.
Now I know why when we're in the Sky Studios and somebody takes a sack, you go so crazy because you know that's drive over effectively.
Yeah, how about my boy Troy Aikman last week saying, well, it's okay, he can take that sack. And then Bailey misses the field goal.
Yeah.
Because you move the ball back, the angle of the field goal changes. See, that's a quarterback guy that doesn't get the big picture, right? Because that freaking special teams coach is going, are you kidding me?
Yeah, it matters to me. It matters to Dan
Bailey.
The
percentage of field goal success is enhanced greatly the closer you are to the pipes when you kick it.
Simple maths, that is, Jeff. Let's move on then to the games. We've already made our picks, but we can change them now if we want. We're checking in later in the week.
Absolutely. That's why we're doing this second, baby.
So Baltimore at New England, Saturday. It's going to kick off around about 9:35 UK time. We're on air at 9:30 on Sky Sports. And this is a good one in terms of, I saw a great quote in the Boston Globe this week, which said, of the remaining playoff teams, only one scares the New England Patriots. And that's who they're going to face this week, purely because of history. You know, because of the recent history and the fact that Flacco has gone up there and won on the road. But we've both picked New England. I mean, is this because it's a new season? It's a new game. You know, there's 30-odd players that are new to these rosters from the last time they met in 2012. What's the reasoning, Jeff?
Well, I think there's a couple things. Number one, the home field advantage is always – Coach Vermeil used to say that the home field advantage is worth 3 points across the board, right? So there's 3 points. This is a game that I think is going to be very close.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, New England plays so well at home. I just don't know how Baltimore is going to match up with Gronkowski. To me, Gronkowski is absolutely the most critical factor offensively for New England. And defensively, how John Pease is going to deal with him. Mm. You know, when they put him out as a wide receiver, when they put him in the slot, when he's at as a fixed tight end, when he's in the backfield. I think it's well documented. Brady's going to play well.
Yeah. Right?
Now, their offensive line has improved. They got a task on their hand because they're going to see different looks. That junk defense that Baltimore runs.
Front, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get Dumervil on one side and Suggs on the other side. Then you're going to get Dumervil and Suggs on the same side. They do an awful lot, you know. And again,
Helotti Nata showed last week he's back. Obviously, he was out with the suspension, but he's back. Huge
upgrade for them inside because now he has the ability to push that pocket from up inside. You know, they had five sacks against Roethlisberger, and Roethlisberger's not an easy guy to sack. So I think that all those things, the team's strengths play into one another's strengths. So, but, you know, again, New England is playing really good defense now themselves. And, you know, I give the edge to New England on the Belichick factor because, to me, they've had 2 weeks. They had a week to heal, to get healthier. And then they've had another week to prepare. So during that first week, I'm sure they did 2 or 3 days on Baltimore.
Yep.
And they did 2 or 3 days on Pittsburgh so that when they came out of the bye, they were far ahead of where they would be if they had to play that week.
Gronkowski is going to be a difference maker, and I'd like to talk about this on Saturday when we're sat in the studio together. He is one of those players that can affect the ball without being anywhere near the ball, because I've seen times this year where he's been split out wide and then Brady's checked to a run up the middle for an easy touchdown because the safety's had to come over, the linebacker's there and needs help over the top, and you know, you're drawing all these bodies out. I mean, he is a difference maker who wasn't there when they played in the AFC Championship game after the 2012 season.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. And again, that's going to be where John Pease and the defensive staff now from Baltimore are sitting in meetings, and they're trying to say, okay, when he's in this position, we need to play it this way. When he's here, we can do this. When he's there, we can get help from here. Mm. But you can't help everybody. And if you're going to double him, then obviously you do take somebody from another position, whether that's a high player, right, which is typically in, you know, one of your safeties is going to come down and he's going to work with in concert with a linebacker or corner or whoever, or it's from inside the box. And when you limit the number of people in the box, what do you become susceptible to? The running game. Mm. And I think what we've seen with New England is and the way that, you know, that they call games offensively, that they will take whatever it is that you give them. If you're going to empty and play a five-man box so that you can match up outside, they're more than happy to just run the football on you.
They're a chameleon, aren't they?
Yeah,
they can change
exactly.
From week
and, that's,
to week.
And Josh McDaniels does a great job with that. Mm-hmm. I think they've done an outstanding job of understanding what it is where the defense weakens itself based upon what they do, and then they go after you. And, you know, again, watch early in the game. See how many formations and personnel groups New England gets into trying to see what Baltimore's answers are.
One other matchup I'm really looking forward to seeing just from the physicality. I mean, Steve Smith and Darrelle Revis have gone at it over the years, and I think Revis has probably done a good job of keeping Steve Smith in check. But if Steve Smith and Brandon Browner get together, because Browner's very, very physical, that could be interesting.
Yeah, there'll be flags galore on that one. It'll be like Flag Day out there because those two guys will not back off from one another. You know, Browner started his career in the Canadian League and had a reputation for being a big, long, physical corner up there. And then, you know, you can imagine him in our league, in the Canadian League, where there is no 5-yard chuck zone. You can hit receivers anywhere across the field. So he was, I mean, he's got arms that reach across this room.
Yeah.
So, but it'll be interesting. And you know, where they're going to work, how they're going to work. Owen Daniels, how are they going to match up Owen Daniels?
Yeah.
Yeah, where's, you know, how's that all fit? That's what makes watching the games and working the games with you so much fun, because we get a chance to, you know, while the fans are listening to Troy and Joe Buck, you and I are talking football
in
the studio.
We're both sick. I'm going to stick with New England. I think it's going to be a good game.
Yeah, I do. I think little positive for a little, you know, if you're a Raven fan, a little bit more positive energy. Eugene Monroe looks like he's going to play.
Yes, that's and big, that, isn't that it? Is Left big. Tackle. That's that massive. Is big. Let's move on to Saturday night game then, which is Carolina at Seattle. So Panthers won last week against the Arizona Cardinals. Seahawks. We just mentioned how dominant they've been at home. And, yeah, I mean, you look at the numbers, Jeff. They've ended up pretty much where they were last year. First in total defense, first in scoring defense, third in rushing defense, first in passing defense. They had that wobble in the middle of the season. But the Seahawks look a lot like the Seahawks of a year ago. Or do they? I mean, where is it offense that would worry you, if anything?
Well, I think so. Again, let's just be honest. I went back and looked yesterday. I watched that entire 13-9 game from earlier in the season.
Yep.
And, you know, Marshawn Lynch drops a ball on the goal line. He should have caught a little slant route, which would have been a touchdown. It ricocheted off his hands, and Carolina was able to intercept it. Mm. And then they had another opportunity on a wide-open guy in the red zone. And Russell missed him. So that game could have been much different score-wise. Mm. I think this game will be a low-scoring game. I think Seattle is playing really good football right now, coming into this thing healthy after a bye week. But, you know, on the other hand, you know, we always talk about how important it is you're hot at the right time. And I don't know if there's not a hotter team right now than the Carolina Panthers, because they've had decisive wins in the last few weeks.
This is why it's good to check back in with people closer to the weekend, because there's now injury news that relates directly to this game. Star Lutuleli, the defensive tackle, who's really come on strong the last couple of weeks. He had an injury in November, but he was back and a real part of that defense, which has played so well for Carolina over the last month. He's broken his foot. I mean, must be frustrating for Ron Rivera. Apparently got the foot rolled over towards the end of a practice on Tuesday. I mean, in practice, at this time of year, it must be like a punch in the gut.
Well, you know what? It's what you face. I mean, that's the nature of this game. And I'm sure that, you know, they'll do the best they can do with what they got. But and it's next man up. But why is that so important? Because you look at Star's numbers, and he doesn't have great numbers, all right? But it's important in that defense, because the heart and soul of that defense is Davis and Kuechly, and their ability to run and make plays.
Run free, yeah.
And that's dependent upon those big guys like Lotulelei inside.
What about the two running games here? Because we know what Marshawn Lynch has brought for a number of years to this team, but Carolina have that with Jonathan Stewart at the moment. But this is where this game is interesting. You can't look at the running games of these teams and it be just the running backs. It's not. These quarterbacks are running quarterbacks. Now, they won't want to be. It almost sounds like a negative, doesn't it? A running quarterback.
But yeah.
They're quarterbacks who can run.
They're quarterbacks who you have to defend.
Yeah.
As a defensive coordinator, there are some quarterbacks you don't defend in the run. You don't defend Peyton Manning in the run. You don't defend Tom Brady in the run. These guys you have to account for in the run. And what does that do to you? Well, it thins you out, because you have to leave people. You can't typically on the backside of a zone play, that end can crash and chase the ball because he's not worried about the quarterback pulling the ball. Well, I just looked at three Seahawks games yesterday, and one of the things that Russell Wilson does a great job with, and Darrell Bevell, their offensive coordinator, schemes extremely well, are what we call naked plays, where he'll put the ball in Marshawn Lynch's stomach and then pull it out and go to the edge. And, you know, they've got pass routes built off of that, which, again, really stresses that backside player. So he doesn't know whether to crash down and chase Marshawn Lynch or stay home and contain the quarterback. And, again, it just puts more stress on the defensive personnel.
Where have you seen this defense, if you're looking at film, where have you seen it with Seattle get better over the last half of the season? Really probably is the half of the season.
When they got their linebackers back, you know.
Wagner back.
And then I think also they evolved up front, you know, because you can't again, it's difficult to take a Red Bryant out of the mix and not think that there's going to be some drop off. And it takes a while.
Yeah,
for
you don't
guys.
Lose the numbers, do no. you? Again, that's the thing where it's deceiving.
But you lose guys the ability to play together, how they fit, where they're going to play this block. All of those things have been, I think. And then again, on top of it, you got young linebackers in there that aren't used to playing. Mm. You know, that's where they showed some little, not nicks, but they just showed a little holes in them. The secondary is the secondary. They're going to be who they are. Mm-hmm. But I think now that they're better up front and the linebackers are all healthy, that's when you saw the personality of the Seahawks defense come back.
So we're expecting a low-scoring game, but I've got Seattle. You've got Seattle here. You're going to stick with that?
Staying with that one.
All right, so those are the Saturday games. Let's move on to Sunday then. We're on air from 5:30 p.m. on Sky Sports 3. Kickoff for the first game is just about 6:05, and it's an absolute cracker. The Dallas Cowboys at the Green Bay Packers. So Dallas this year went 8-0 on the road, and the Green Bay Packers went 8-0 at home. So, you know, the strength against strength, something's got to give. It's Aaron Rodgers against Tony Romo. But, Jeff, as we're recording this on Thursday, oh, crikey, that's what busy week it's been. I didn't even know what day it was. As we're recording this on Thursday, we're still waiting for Aaron Rodgers to step onto the practice field for the first time. So there's still some uncertainty there, although he insists he's going to go. And I mean, the bottom line is he's going to have to tape it up and go and just see how far he can go.
Yeah, you know, and a calf is a different kind of injury. Mm. You know, I'm sure that they'll tape it as best they can tape it and support it in every way they can. But it's like a hamstring. You can't shoot it and play through the pain,
right?
As if you had a sprained ankle or a broken bone in your hand or whatever. Yep. This is a tough one because so much of what he does, and after watching tape yesterday, so much of what they do offensively is dependent upon his ability to extend plays with his feet and to throw off of the spot. When we were walking over here, you got some coach in you, man. I'm telling you, because you made a great comment about his ability to throw off his spot. Now, for the listeners out there, what Neil's talking about is the launch point, the spot that the quarterback is going to drop to in his drop, and then at the top of the drop where the ball will come out. Well, defensively, you want typically to move the quarterback off that spot. You fight as a rusher. Even if you can't sack him, you want to make him move off his spot. Well, I'm not sure you do that with this guy.
No.
Because when he gets off his spot, he is deadly. And what's really unique, and we'll break this down for the viewers on Sunday, is that he and Jordy Nelson have almost an uncanny ability to improvise when plays break down. And what's critical for a receiver to understand is when your quarterback gets in duress, you have to make yourself available to the quarterback.
Yeah, you'll work your way back.
Yeah, and one of the things that separates Emmanuel Sanders, and he had this even as a college player, is he's extremely quarterback friendly. Mm. He's always going to be in the right spot for the quarterback.
Yeah, I think I said to you on the way down, Greg Jennings told me that, you know, Aaron Rodgers is actually in his mind a better passer on the move out of the pocket. So you would never normally want to force him out there. But do you this week? Do you want to, if you're the Dallas Cowboys, do you say, well, let's just see if we can make him run and see if he can run? And maybe if he does, then you don't do it anymore. But do you try and bring extra heat, or do you just play your regular game?
I think the Cowboys will play their regular coverage scheme.
Yeah.
Now, again, you also got to understand that the Packers have seen this scheme for a long time. So, again, let's talk about it. This is good stuff here because you're not getting this on any other podcast,
like
but this
good.
One. Think about it this way. Where did Rod Marinelli come from? He came from Chicago. Before he was in Chicago, he was where?
Detroit.
He was the head coach in Detroit.
Yeah.
So he has been running this system that entire time. Almost the exact same amount of years that Rodgers has been a quarterback.
Yeah.
When Marinelli was running it in Detroit, who was running it in Chicago? Lovie Smith. Mm. So you've played against this system many, many times. All right? Leslie Frazier was running it in Minnesota. So you've seen this defense.
Same deal.
They have a plan for Tampa too.
Yeah.
Now, they have to execute it, but they're not going to be intimidated by it, and they're not going to be scared away from it because they've had so many reps at it.
What are the key throws that you have to make if you've got these two high safeties that we often see in the Tampa 2? What do you need to be as a quarterback, and does that fit what Aaron Rodgers can do?
Well, yeah, the first thing you have to be able to do is you have to fit the ball up in the seams, right?
Yep.
Now, the wideouts, there's when you play cover two, the typical places where you want to attack it are right down the middle between the two safeties,
yep,
and outside in what we call the voids between the corner and the safety. Now, what the Cowboys do an outstanding job with, and we'll break this down for the viewers, is their corners, if you don't occupy the corners, they will sink underneath everything.
Yep.
So just like in the NBA, it's matchup zone. You slough to the ball. You slough to the receiver. Mm-hmm. No receiver in your zone, sink and look for work. So if they're going to play it that way, which is typically the way they play it, now what becomes important are the checkdowns over the middle where the Mike linebacker in cover two, in Tampa two, to take away the middle of the field, he has to run down the middle of the field. Mm. And interestingly enough, when we would face that scheme when I was with June Jones, and June's a mastermind in the passing game, we treated Tampa 2 like cover 3 because we just said the Mike is the middle safety. As he runs down the middle, he's going to occupy the position of where a free safety would be. So we wanted to work down inside between those two linebackers.
Running games are going to be important for both teams, aren't they?
Yeah, this is, again, something that I saw when the Packers were playing Atlanta earlier in the year. They were checking into runs anytime they had two high safeties because they knew then that there could only be six in the box,
yep,
and they had enough to block.
This stat, incredible, really. I mean, it's the top two passers in the NFL this season. So Tony Romo finished first in the NFL with a rating of 113.2. Aaron Rodgers had a rating of 112.2. I would never have guessed this. I knew Rodgers was the highest rated quarterback in NFL history. This is the top two rated passers in NFL history.
It's incredible.
And Tony Romo was second. Rodgers is top with 106.0. And Tony Romo is second at 97.6.
Well, you know, it's just all the intrigue added to this game. Yeah. What an iconic game. You know,
It's Packers, it's the Cowboys, teams, Lambeau Field.
It's Tom Landry against Vince Lombardi on the frozen tundra.
It's all of that. These are two. If you switch on the TV on Sunday night, those are just uniforms you would expect to see in an NFL playoff for me.
Yeah, you know what? And I am so blessed because two of my kids are playing in this game. And I can't wait to talk to them after the game. Actually, three of my kids. Tremont Williams, number 38 for the Packers.
Go against each other.
Chris Banjo, number 32 of the Packers. And Cole Beasley. Actually, there's four of them, actually. Sterling Moore, number 26 for the Cowboys. And yep. Cole Beasley, number 11 for... So four kids that I've been blessed to coach are playing in this game. I can't wait to hear them talk about what it felt like to come out of that tunnel for this game.
Fantastic stuff. So that's the Dallas Cowboys and the Green Bay Packers. I went Dallas, and you've gone Green Bay.
What was the caveat when we talked about this?
Aaron Rodgers.
I said Aaron Rodgers. So I'm going to say the Cowboys. I think it's a pick'em game.
Yep.
And I think at the time of the coin toss, if Rodgers isn't 80% or better, the Cowboys can win it.
All right. Good stuff, Jeff. Let's move on to the last game of the weekend then. Potential passing of the NFL torch. If you're a Colts fan, that's what you're hoping for. It's the
if you're a what fan?
A Colts fan.
A what fan?
Andrew Luck fan.
There you go.
It's the Indianapolis Colts who finished 11-5 in the regular season at the Denver Broncos who finished 12-4. So I went Indianapolis in this one. Jeff's gone Denver. Peyton Manning is insisting still that he's absolutely fine. But I think we've seen in the past 6 weeks or so, you know, the run numbers are increasing. They have made a concerted effort to make this about the entire team, not just about number 18.
I got really mixed emotions about that. Not mixed emotions about what they're doing. I think they're doing the right thing. Mm. Obviously, they're giving themselves the best chance to win a football game. But how much of that is strategic and how much of it is out of necessity? Because I look at the tape And I just don't think he's 100%.
No, I don't think he is either. Maybe it's harsh to expect him to be, but you know, if you're not, you can say it. I mean, we can see it. And John Elway, it's no shame in that, is there? John Elway, in the last 2 years when he won his two Super Bowls, as good as Elway was in his absolute prime, he was long past his prime when he actually lifted the Vince Lombardi Trophy. But he lent on Terrell Davis, he lent on Rod Smith, he lent on Shannon Sharp. You know, there were people around him that helped him, and I think that's where they are now with Peyton Manning.
Well, and when he was at his best was when he had the best players around him, and they played good enough defense, and they're very similar to those teams. All right, this little guy that they got running the football now has really given them a lift.
Yeah,
really, and is much like Davis was for him as a running back. And you look at them, and they've got a tight end like they had in those days.
This is the thing. They do have weapons.
Yeah, they've got weapons all over the place. So they're going to be difficult to defend for the Colts. I have been impressed with Greg Minuski, the defensive coordinator for the Colts, and how aggressive he has got the Colts playing.
Yeah. I think when you look at the Broncos, you know, receiving targets are tremendous. When he's not become an afterthought, but – Wes Welker is not the big part of this offense that many thought he might be. Doesn't need to be, because you know, your guy Emmanuel Sanders is to me a bigger upgrade on Eric Decker for this offense. I think he has that versatility to play anywhere. You've still got Demaryius Thomas, you've got Julius Thomas in there. So, you know, Peyton is no mug, is he? I mean, that's the thing. We're talking about a decline, but we're talking about a guy who can still drop it on a sixpence from 30 yards away.
Yeah, and you know what? It's much like Welker. Welker's not what Welker was when he was in Miami or when he was in New England. But he still creates a tremendous problem for you because he's the fourth option. Who's your fourth best DB? He's going to – I mean, there aren't very many guys, teams that have three good DBs. Now you got to have a fourth one because I just don't see how you can expect a linebacker to deal with Julius Thomas. I just don't see – I don't see anybody on that Colt roster that Freeman can probably run with him. But, again, now you're talking about taking him out of the middle of the field.
Andrew Luck completed 40 touchdown passes this year, most in the NFL, but there were 22 turnovers as well. Last week, there weren't any turnovers, and we talked about this in the podcast earlier in the week. I mean, some of the drop passes, he would have gone for 500 yards. I mean, he was on the money time and time again. Not a perfect game, but does he need a clean game or as clean a game as possible to go into Denver, win on the road? I mean, what's it going to take for the Colts to win this?
I think, number one, he's got to be judicious with the football. That's a Stanford word for a Stanford quarterback. All right. He's got to be judicious with the ball. You got to put the ball where it belongs. And then I think, to be honest with you, where the Colts may be a little deficient is I see far too many drop balls out of those receivers, you know. And you can't in the playoffs get a drive stalled because – you convert on a 3rd and 8 and he throws a strike on a hook and a guy puts it on the ground. So they've got to play a very good football game offensively. And you say a clean game, as clean a game as they can possibly play, because, you know, let's face it, Denver has improved their defensive football team from last year. But so have the Colts. You know, you look at Vontae Davis and Toler, that's two good corners out there. Now, again, we talked about – how are they going to handle four of those wide receivers? We'll see. You know, you're not going to put Landry down on Julius Thomas. I don't think he's athletic enough. Those safeties they got are hitters, but they're not cover guys. Yeah. So, you know, I'm sure as they sit in Indianapolis and they're talking about all the personnel groups and how you match up and who's going to go with who and whether they're going to play right and left or whether they're going to play, you know, match and, you know, Vontae Davis is going to take, Thomas and Toler will take Emmanuel Sanders. Again, all of that is the neat stuff that goes on around the game.
How much does somebody like Chuck Pagano try and stay out of the defensive meeting room in a week like this? He's the head coach now, but you must wonder. He's got some thoughts on how to take down Manning.
I'm sure he gives Greg his feedback. Yeah. I'm sure he's telling Greg that I think we need to do this or, you know, are you prepared for this? Really, the head coach's role right now, the great ones, they're – involved in all of it. They're the CEO of the football team.
Yeah.
And so, for example, a guy like Belichick, he's going to get Josh McDaniels and the offensive staff or just Josh by himself, and they're going to go through in detail what the expectation level is, what the play calling is, what the situational football is. And then same thing defensively. You know, every coach is going to – Pagano, as you said, will sit with Greg and say, Greg, how are we going to handle – you know, what's our first thought on matchup? What do we want to do when they go two tight ends? What about when four wides? What about empty? How are we going to stop the run? What – all of that stuff will be discussed. And that's just managing – you know, as a head coach, you are the CEO or the manager of the organization.
So I've gone Indianapolis – foolhardily. Well, you've gone Denver. You stick with Denver.
I'm going to stay with Denver, but I you hit me with that stat this morning, and it just, you know, you talk about the impact of stats, and twice as many interceptions as touchdowns, Peyton Manning in the last little bit. So I think that's a haunting stat to me.
Two good words you've come up with on this podcast, judicious and slough. I like slough. We like that. Jeff, let's do our rapid fire questions and then we'll get a couple of questions from the mailbag. Right, so we're going to go in a minute. All right, so I'm going to ask you as many questions. You've got to get through them as quickly as you can. Which road team has the best chance to win this weekend?
Baltimore.
Which quarterback throws the most touchdown passes this week?
Brady.
Seattle and Carolina will combine for how many points?
28.
Will we see Bill Belichick smile this weekend?
No.
Not even they win?
No. No.
The unlikely hero of the weekend could be?
Cole Beasley.
Oh, nice. Will there be an officiating controversy?
Yes.
Will Aaron Rodgers play the whole game?
No.
The most important coaching job will be done by?
Jason Garrett.
Ah, interesting. If we had more time, I'd ask you why. Who has the bigger day, Dez Bryant or Jordy Nelson?
Dez Bryant.
All right, we get one more in, I think, here, only because that's the last question I've got on my list. Who has a bigger day, Andrew Luck or Peyton Manning? Come on, Jeff, tell me. Tell me like it is. I can see.
Don't do it. Andrew Luck.
You couldn't do it to me. Let's get a couple of questions in the mailbag then. Some good response from you guys as well. Try and get a couple of these in. Tom Weeks says, how does chipping a defensive end or a linebacker affect a tight end's roots? Because he's expecting Gronk to have to do this against Baltimore.
You know what? It affects them because they can't get into the route as fast. Mm-hmm. When you talk about chip, what you're talking about is as he goes in his release or as he sets, he bangs the defensive end typically on back onto the offensive tackle. So the offensive tackle only has to really protect one half of the defensive end. I would say that's actually a heck of a football question. Yeah. But in the New England game, I don't think Gronk will be doing a lot of chipping. I think the guy that will be doing the chipping will be the running back.
Okay. This is a question from Niall Owens, who says, is the offensive coordinator quarterback relationship of greater importance than a quarterback and a head coach?
In my opinion, yes, it is, because typically the offensive coordinator is going to spend more time, or the quarterback will spend more time with the offensive coordinator. Now, I will say that that's not true in the case of a head coach like Mark Trestman was. Mm-hmm. Mark Trestman's going to – his relationship will always be – with the quarterback will always be first and foremost on his football team. And that's not a negative. That's a positive. I think Bill Walsh was the same way. It was more important that Bill Walsh had a great relationship with Steve Young than Holmgren or Trestman or any of the guys that – Shanahan or any of the guys that were offensive coordinators for him.
Let's take one – see if we get one more in before we finished. Let's take this one from NFL Lad. Says, after 6 years with New England, does Baltimore defensive coordinator Dean Pease have an edge over Tom Brady?
You know, Dean has an edge, I think, only in that they've played enough. There's a success there. I think he has a formula. But that formula, I think this is really important with Baltimore that you understand this. Let's go back through the history of Baltimore. I'm going to start throwing names at you. Marv Lewis, Mike Smith, Rex Ryan, all of those guys have been Greg Madison, who's now the defensive coordinator at Michigan, Pagano, all of those guys have been defensive coordinators in that system. And that system has not changed. It's kind of morphed a little bit as each of them has added their own little wrinkles. But that junk system that they run in Baltimore is extremely well positioned to play against New England. And I think that is more important. This, what their expectation level is on defense is more important than who's calling the
defense. That's a really good point, actually, because Rex Ryan's Jets defense have always played well against Tom Brady, haven't they? For the most part.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why I think Baltimore has a chance in that game.
All right, Jeff, we're out of time.
Awesome, man. It was fun.
Listen, there's a couple more nights of sleep. Sleep well, because there'll be no sleep over the weekend.
Don't want to sleep, baby. It's the playoffs.
There you go. We appreciate you joining us. That was Jeff Reinbold. I've been Neil Reynolds. It's been Inside
playoffs?
The Huddle.
Playoffs? Playoffs?
It's been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. It's a USP content production. We're sponsored by Sport Lobster. We'll see you all 9:30 p.m. on Sky Sports 2 on Saturday.
Aloha.
What Jeff said.